If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Better Call Paul is a production of Lola Media. Say hi, Lola.
Hey, everyone. This is Paul Sarker from Better Call Paul. Just wanted to remind you that the show is intended for entertainment purposes only and is not legal advice. I am not your lawyer unless we separately agree for me to represent you, and the views expressed by Mesh and me are solely our own. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Better Call Paul, the show where we discuss the legal and business side behind the scenes of Hollywood sports and entertainment. I'm your co-host, Paul Sarker, former Marvel lawyer and current Big Law Media attorney.
And I'm your other co-host, Mesh Lakhani. Paul, we have got a special episode today. You want to tell us what it's all about?
This is a special episode. The topic this week is all about NIL. Despite the fact that the strikes may be getting resolved and Rupert Murdoch announced his successor and a ton of other big media stories this week, we are focusing on NIL, which is name, image, and likeness. For those that don't know, name, image, and likeness is something that anyone can monetize. It's your name, your image, your likeness, often your voice, which you can license to brands or to promote, or you can sell. You know, you can put your name on merchandise, you can do endorsement deals, any number of things. And the reason it's taken on a significant meaning in the zeitgeist is because of college athletics. So just to give you that background before we dive into the interview, NCAA sports have been around for over 100 years. National Collegiate Athletic Association is the body that governs intercollegiate athletics among all universities in the U.S. And one of the premises is that college athletics is, in order to be a student athlete and participate in college athletics, you have to be an amateur. And an amateur traditionally meant someone that didn't get paid to play a sport. That's distinguished from professional sports, where athletes who compete in professional sports do earn compensation to play. So it wasn't until the 1980s that the NCAA went from being for the purposes of sport and students not getting paid to big business. In the 1980s, football and basketball started generating meaningful revenue through media contracts, ticket sales, and merchandise. And it's only grown since then. So at the point now where people estimate that the NCAA will generate around $17 billion in revenue from various sources. Actually, so NCAA schools generate that much revenue. The NCAA's take is probably just a little bit over a billion. This is projected to be around $100 million per school per year in the SEC in 2028. And $75 million per school per year in the Big Ten around 2025. So it's big business because football and basketball sports are essentially watched nationwide. They're a huge draw in a lot of ways, compete with professional sports for ad dollars and for television dollars and ticket sales. And this has led to a lot of implications, meaning conference realignment, where schools will jump from one conference to another to become members of a more lucrative media rights deal. It's also led to a huge investment in athletic departments and facilities. So a lot of schools have facilities that are comparable to professional training facilities and practice facilities. It's also led to arms race for compensation for coaches and their staff. So if you're someone that can put a winning product on the field, whether it's basketball or football, those coaches can make in excess of $10 million a year at the top of the food chain. What hadn't changed until recently was what student athletes got paid. So for the longest time, because of this amateurism principle, students couldn't get paid. All they could get was a scholarship and a meal stipend and perhaps some money for books. Otherwise, they would compromise their eligibility. And that all changed in 2021. But prior to that, when the industry was growing and evolving, but student athletes couldn't get paid, a black market evolved and it became very dirty, and players would get money from agents and potentially boosters in order to induce them to attend a particular school. And it was really a market that existed due to economic incentives, but it was not really regulated. Then, right before the pandemic, California passed a law, the Fair Pay to Play Act, along with a host of other states, Alabama, Florida, Georgia, among others, passed laws saying that any rule or principle that prevented a student athlete from earning compensation was invalid. So the NCAA rule on amateurism was declared to be illegal under various state laws, in essence. And there was a Supreme Court case, NCAA versus Alston in 2021, that basically said it was anti-competitive for schools to essentially limit how much they would have to provide in benefits to student athletes. It was just seemed like a restraint on trade, or it could have been anti-competitive. So in the summer of 2021, right around July, the NCAA completely changed its policy and said, you know what? Although it was illegal in the past, we're now allowing student athletes to earn compensation from the use of their name, image, and likeness. They took a very laissez-faire approach. Basically, as long as it's done in compliance with state law, as long as the university is aware and has consent over the use of its logos and no students are paid to play, basically NCAA is not going to get involved in NIL. And so this has been a game changer, and it's led to a lot of students earning money, a lot of students transferring, and the establishment of what are called NIL collectives, which we'll discuss today. And NIL collectives are not affiliated with any universities, but they are established by people close to the university, boosters, recent grads, former athletes, whatever, and they're meant to encourage or raise contributions to provide to players as NIL compensation. That's the basic gist.
Thanks for that introduction, Paul. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to get back with our interview with Manuel Hernandez and Jeff McKay.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So, folks, this is our interview with Jeff McKay and Manuel Hernandez.
Yeah, so we got a really close friend. I've known him for over a decade, Manuel Hernandez, Murr, and his business associate, Jeff McKay. And we're honored to have them. New client of mine and great guys, super well connected, and have been living and breathing this stuff. I know it's a very interesting topic. It's hot button. I want to just dive in. Jeff, Murr, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourselves and like give us your background?
So my name is Manuel Hernandez III, eloquently known as Murr, which is a childhood nickname I've had since I was a baby boy. Grew up at the University of Southern California, USC. Been there since I was a little baby, man. Thank God that my dad had me involved just as a lover of the program. And, you know, I was able to fulfill some lifelong dreams and attend the university. So I'm an MBA alumnus from the prestigious Marshall School of Business. Shout out Marshall, number one business school out there in America. And then when I was there, I had the ultimate dream of working for the athletic department. I had an opportunity to work in equipment and multiple different functions when I was there. And it just led to what I do now in my career. Currently, I stand as a sports and entertainment director for Raymond James Financial, large Wall Street firm, oversee asset management for multiple NFL clients, along with other sorts of clients as well. But my bread and butter is the NFL. So really mentoring, fostering finance and teaching the players about banking, investments, real estate, loans, and anything that comes under the financial scope. And so I've had the honor of doing that now for 7 years. I worked at Morgan Stanley for 2 years, Merrill Lynch for 5 years as a sports and entertainment advisor. And then I recently went to Raymond James at the beginning of this year, 2023, in January. And so the promotion has been amazing. Working with the NFL clients and a lot of the Trojans have been amazing and really a lifelong dream. And that's how the start of NIL and my involvement really became about.
Yeah, I remember when I first got out to LA, I met Murr. You were
your second year of business school or first year? I don't remember exactly.
I was in my first year because the reason why I remember is because you got the apartment right in downtown.
Yeah, I had that apartment right in downtown. Yeah. I was like a baby entertainment lawyer. I was deciding or in the process of deciding whether I should leave Disney and maybe go and do more like private practice things. And, you know, you had such a vision, you know, it was like, you're like, yeah, I love football. I love the program and I'm a financial whiz. So one of the things I just meld all my skill sets and represent athletes because it's a really tricky thing. Yeah. And at the time, I think athletes and the representation has improved a lot, but you would hear these stories about players sign a $100 million contract and then they're broke 4 years later.
Yeah.
And the thing about the NFL, which you would always say is like, it's a very short-term thing. It's super competitive. If you can make it, awesome. No guarantee that you stay there. And so you've got to really capitalize like every step along the way financially.
And I think you bring up a quick point of why Jeff and I are even here. It's just like so crazy how the world works. And him and I were meant to do what we're doing. And the reason why I'm even in the field was one of the reasons why I was talking to Jeff's dad. Jeff's dad, JK, iconic figure at SC. I mean, I don't know if there's anybody walking the university that's loved more than JK, honestly, man. I mean, he's a great man. He's like one of us. That's how I describe him. He's like one of us. And so I had a conversation with him one time about what I wanted to do in my career and work in sports and figure that out. I was blessed to the heavens to be an early investor in life. I bought my first apartment building when I was like 26 years old. And I just had a lot of curiosity about stocks. And I built my own personal portfolio around stocks, even as an undergrad before I got to business school. JK had the wherewithal to say, hey, I think you'd be a great financial advisor, man. You understand sports, you could recruit, these guys love you, you could teach them about money. And I, the one thing that always stuck out to me, he said, there's not another Trojan out there. We need one of us out there protecting these guys. And that meant a lot to me. Like, he said that in a way that was endearing, that I felt he included me in the Trojan family. And that was probably one of the greatest compliments I've ever had in my life. And so I was like, okay, if JK's telling me this, I think it's going to be great. And I kind of took it and ran with it. And I just asked for a reference on my little resume after my MBA. And then, you know, I got started at Morgan Stanley and the rest is history. And I always just checked in with them periodically, just letting them know, hey, I got this guy now and I got this guy and I'm building this up. And he would always like, man, that a baby, that's the way to go do it. I know you can do it. It's truly exactly what you just said. And so that's why USC is such a special place. And that's why you pay to go to business school and be around that, because you never know at a moment's notice when that light is going to come on. And the good Lord blessed it upon me. And I've had an opportunity to execute at that. And it's been great. It's been absolutely phenomenal.
I remember when you were coming up back in LA, you were always hanging out with the players. And it wasn't like some suit, you know, hanging out, trying to pitch them business. It was much more natural and genuine. Like you were one of them.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's probably the best place to come at being someone's advisor, right? Like if they trust you, if they get along with you as a friend, and then you have all this expertise yeah. and knowledge, it's a lot, I think, of an easier sell.
That was the point where JK was like keen on that. I didn't know how to kind of navigate that. I think I was a little, I don't know what word to come up with, but I was a little apprehensive on how to make that switch from a in-house helper of the athletic department and a good friend to the guys and make that transition to a business financial advisor. You're entrusting me with all your wealth that you just busted your butt for and it got signed to the NFL. Like, that's definitely a tough transition. That doesn't come overnight. Like, you got to have a lot of savvy and like a lot of EQ behind that. And so, you know, yeah. Plus the good heavens, it worked out. But talking to JK about those little things, it was like helpful. Like, he was like, ah, you can do it, dude. And it was not really even like, oh, do this. It was just more of like encouragement. Like, don't worry about all that stuff, dude. Like, get out of your own head and it's going to work well. Just be yourself and it'll come together for you. And that's kind of all I really needed. And that's what happened, essentially what had happened. And that's why, like, you got to have good men and good women and good mentors around you just to kind of give you that nudge. It's not any specific little thing. It's sometimes it's just like them helping you get out of your own head. That's how it happened for me, in fact.
I'm generally curious about what is the guidance that you think that they need that you provide for them that I guess you would find surprising that they don't have? Or, you know, is there something that you really feel rewarded about when you work with them?
Oh, man. I could probably go on for 3 hours about that, brother. But the number one thing for me is like when you sit on the kitchen table with them about January, February, 2 months before the draft, and you walk them through the plan of their next 5 years, going through the money and the flow of it and the taxes and everything that they're going to be asked and how their whole first 4 years roll, and you shepherd them through that. And you're not only shepherding the player, you're shepherding their parents or their loved one that they trust. It might be grandma, grandpa, mom, dad, aunt, uncle, whoever that core group is for them. And then you go to the table 4 years later and you say, well, look at what we've done. And you look at the investments and you see that they're out of debt and they got a pile of cash sitting there and they've invested in the stock market and they paid off a home and they own an apartment building and they're doing all these things that we've talked about in theory, right? You know, I learned a lot of theory and academics at USC, but it's a difference to teach it, and then there's a difference to actually implement it and then get them to listen to you while you're implementing it and you're balancing all that stuff. And it's just a beautiful moment, man. I mean, I can tell you there's been some moments when my guys have signed their second contracts where me and the parents have just had, you know, an embrace that it's like, golly, like, wow, look at where we got.
Second contract's a big payday,
right?
Yeah,
second contract's a big payday.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that part is the beautiful part to me. It's the journey. It's the day-to-day grind. It's the, hey, brother, you know, log in and send me your pay stub, you know, so I can make sure your taxes are taking care of the right way. Like all the little work that goes along with it. There's so much touch points, man. There's so many of them. And you know what Jeff and I are doing through NIL, part of our education base is we're going to make that learning curve much less steeper for the players. And, you know, that's why I've had a bird's eye view of how that all works when they get out from USC to the NFL. And it's so beautiful, man. It really is. And a lot of these guys just don't understand it. And like probably all of us didn't understand that, right? You know, when we're 18, 19, 20 years old,
oh, no.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, and I always tell the parents, you're always going to hear me as I'm coming from the heart of a teacher. I'm not trying to pitch you a stock or a fund or an idea. I'm going to teach you about what it typically looks like to build wealth in America. And what are the tenets around that and what path we want to go, and whatever path you choose is going to be the best, I'm going to be there shepherding you through that process. And it's been great.
Well, I've got to imagine that trust is a big thing here, because I mean, there's probably people all over telling them things and, you know, everyone's trying to get a piece. And how do you really build that trust?
Oh man, that Jeff and I were just talking about, I got asked that question at a very power broker lunch in downtown LA the other day. And I was like, Jeff, how did I handle that, dude? I asked him that specifically because and my answer was just, how do all of us gain trust, right? It's through our actions and our words and being a man of our word, looking people dead in the eye, shaking their hand. My dad told me that a long time ago when I started this business. He said, son, the only way that you're going to get it is if you pull up to people's house, you shake their hand, and you look them dead in the eye, and you go through what you're going to go through when it comes to money. Money's a very personal thing, dude. It's a different level of contract when you're a contract advisor and you're negotiating their deal to what they're going to earn, as opposed to sitting on their kitchen table and going through their debit account on their checkbook. Like, it's a whole different level of transparency. It's a whole different level of trust. So, like, when I go on the road to go visit my client, like, I'm staying at their house, dude. Like, I usually hang in their guest room. I'm there with them anytime I'm in town because, you know, if somebody's handling my money and they have access to my money and advice on what I'm doing, I need to be able to talk to them, see them, touch them, feel at all points in time. So I tell my boys, like, you text me, you FaceTime me, you call me. And if you need me, I'll be on the next flight out or wherever I need to be. I'll be there right there for you. So to your question, it's just trust builds by action and by action over time. And it's just like money, right? It compounds. But the crazy thing about trust, which we all know, is you lose it in one little instance. You put a whole lifetime into something and you make one error judgment that you put yourself before the client or whatever it may be, your whole empire could come crumbling down. And so I'm mindful of that. And beyond that, it's like, look at the trust that the university and these people have given me. I mean, I take that, like, man, to heart. I mean, that's at the center of the Hernandez family fulcrum of what we do, you know, day to day. And so I don't take that lightly. That's something that, like I told Jeff, and Jeff told me the other day, it's like, you don't get that in a day. You don't get that in a year. You get that over a lifetime. And that's truly what I've done. I've been building over a lifetime. And so 100%. Thanks for asking that question, man, because I think that's a good one. And a lot of people wonder it. I mean, I never thought of it, but I was asked pretty direct a week and a half ago, and I was kind of taken aback. And then I just, all right, let me just answer it like the truth. And that's what it is.
Jeff, I wanted to ask, can you talk about your collective, what the steps were behind creating it?
Yeah, of course. So collective is called Conquest Collective. The steps to get involved. So like I said before, me and Manny had been talking about this for a long time, months and months of kind of planning going into it. And I think our goal was we wanted to create something, you know, that was really impactful and did not focus solely on raising donor money. We wanted to have different facets, brand deals, some content, appearances, social media training, financial literacy, a bunch of different things there. Yeah, I think Manny would reiterate that a large portion of our time is spent on the mentorship part, helping people, you know, if someone is creating an LLC, how do they do that? If there are tax implications, showing them exactly how to do it. Because I can say with definite confidence, when I was 18, I did not know how to do any of that. So a lot there. But yeah, I think trying to create a true sports marketing agency for USC student athletes, a lot of thought went into it.
So it's kind of an extension of what Murr has been doing with graduates and athletes on the cusp of being professionals to just now more openly the entire student athlete community, I guess. Can you talk about your relationship with the university? Are you guys affiliated or not?
NIL being so new, and there's so many people that are trying to get in, and similar to Mesh's comments, right? A lot of people masquerade as one thing, but really have intentions of another. And so with us, you know, have such deep ties to the university, although we are a third party entity to the university, right? Because that's just the way the NCAA and legal legislations kind of write it off. But let's rest assured, the reason why Jeff and I are in the saddle is because the university trusts us about our vision and what we bring to the table, and know that we're true Trojans at heart, and we're volunteering our time. I mean, I literally, you know, I volunteer my time, and Jeff and I haven't made a penny off of this. And so they know that our heart is in the right place. We're very, very flexible with the university as far as what they ask of us. They know that we're never going to be somebody that tries to do something rogue and nothing that they don't agree with, and that we're going to play by the rules, and that we're going to involve the USC legends that created the name, image, and likeness of the Interlock, right? So let's face it. The reason why these current players are being able to be paid to use their name, image, and likeness is because the former players of all the lineage back—
It's a program,
man, yeah. You know? And so now we're bringing back in guys like Hayes Poulard to do event activations, and Randall Telfer to do social media education, and Devon Kennard to do financial literacy. And for those of you guys on the show that don't maybe not know those names, those are household iconic names at the USC football department and the USC athletic department. And so if you look at what we're doing, we have such a unique group that, I don't know, I mean, Jeff and I are in the NIL space pretty frequently, and I don't see another group out there that has the level of former student athlete legends involved with them on the day-to-day like we do.
I was just going to add to that, you know, we're lucky that we have a lot of obviously passionate fans, but also passionate former student athletes. So I think we have something like over 30 former NFL players involved with the group who are all just volunteering their time. Like, they really don't stand to gain anything from this. So that part's been really cool just to see.
I mean, you think about it, collectives have to be unaffiliated, because if they were affiliated, then it would basically violate the NCAA prohibition on pay for play. So if there's any inducement for someone to go to a university through funds that were arranged by a collective, it couldn't come from the university or anyone directly associated with the university. So that's why they're not affiliated. I mean, you guys are in the media, potentially the entertainment capital of the world once these strikes end. Southern California, you have Caleb Williams, potentially Heisman winner, maybe two-time Heisman winner, LeBron's son. So do you think that this collective can become a revenue generating thing, or do you think it's always going to be a labor of love?
We've been working on that for a while, setting up acting roles, and obviously not talking about starring in a feature film, but commercial work, behind the scenes, working with a director, that kind of stuff. You know, we're lucky to have some former.
I'll send you guys my headshot.
We're looking for you. But you know, it goes back to, you know, former alums in that industry are trying to help us out.
I'll expound upon that. Absolutely, this is a revenue generating business. It has to be a revenue generating business. Now, here's the difference with the collective model that other people may not understand is when the collective model, how we built out revenue that we generate is there to give back to the players in NIL deals. So it's not necessary to line your pocket to build this iconic marketing agency that we are building. So I'm going to tell you this, and I'm going to put a stamp on this, that we are the best NIL collective agency in America. There's no other school, no other group that has what we have. And although we haven't been very vocal about everything that we built, Jeff and I have worked in silence for a long time, and we're building this thing brick by brick. And so rest assured, this is a revenue generating entity, no doubt about it, right? That's just what it is, and that's what it has to be. Now, it doesn't mean that we're trying to become multimillionaires off of what we're doing, but we're trying to make the student athletes multimillionaires off of what we're doing. And that's what it's all about. Like that's truly what it is. So we're two businessmen and we understand how to monetize things like a podcast or things like a premium content or merchandise or fan experience with activations and experiences that the fans can't get without being become members of our NIL group. And so there's all these things that we got going that has to generate revenue in order for us to complete our mission of giving that back to the former student athletes. And so like, that's one thing about it, right? Jeff and I talk about it all the time. The business model of a collective is a tough business model. It's something that people don't necessarily wrap their head around. So if you go about it saying, well, we're not in it to do this and do that, well, then you're not going to get any revenue to give to the players. And so we're just very mindful that, and we're, Jeff and I are lucky that we were born in Southern California and know the landscape and know the landscape of the university, and we understand all the assets that we have around it, and it's our job to aggregate that under one umbrella. And man, we're having a fun time doing it, man, and it's really, really great of what we got piecing together.
To add on to it, our goal is to create a scalable business model that will continue to grow. So we don't want to be reliant on asking donors for money. You get donor fatigue. You hear across the country these other groups. Eventually, the donors are sick of giving you guys money. So we're trying to find different revenue streams. And it's important. Yeah, I think we have to show some kind of return to them. So
To the brand.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. And here's another thing too, Paul. This is something that, again, expertise on Jeff and I's part. Jeff's dad, obviously being an iconic athletic director and understanding the nuances and me being able to be have access to that, is we understand that athletic departments and universities, they need to raise money. So they're going to their to the donors and saying, hey, we need money for capital funds and everything else. And we have a big, currently the athletic department has a huge project that they're working on and building a new athletic building. And so Jeff and I always knew from the beginning, it's like, dude, we're not going to go and ask people for donations to us. Like, that's the university's lane. Like, let's stay out of their lane and let's build name, image, and likeness. So like, it's really got weird out there where it's like, oh, the donors could just give you money and then you just show up and you get paid. It's like, are you really helping the players on their name, image, and likeness? Because I have NFL clients that are being paid, you know, millions of dollars. Now, I wouldn't say hundreds of million, but 50, 60 million. And they still don't understand name, image, and likeness on their own social media. And they don't even get huge marketing deals, and they're starters in the NFL. And so like, NIL was built to educate the players on how do you build a brand? How do you build your brand? How do you leverage the USC brand and your brand? And how do you do that now digitally, right? Everybody knows digital is the way to go. So how do you do that digitally? How do you do that with companies? How do we educate you on how to price yourself when you're going to work with companies? How do you price yourself for your services? And that's what NIL is truly built on. That's what it should be. And so we've taken that motto and understood that all that stuff that hasn't, it's all right here in LA. It's just that you need to be able to be connected to the people that can make it happen. And so Jeff and I have been able to do that. That's truly what an NIL agency should be. And that's our vision on it, right? And I'm not going to say that if a donor comes to us and say, hey, we'll give you whatever X amount to give to the player, we're going to say, oh, no, we're not going to do that. But that's not how the agency, and that's not how Conquest is built on. We're built on true NIL experience for the players. And I think in the long run, when you look back on it, and they look back at NIL, it's going to say, okay, that's really how it should be built out. It's a tough build. It's a grind. I mean, it's nobody's going to give you anything. Like, you got to be on the phone. You got to be calling. You got to be connecting. You know, you're jumping hoops and all that. And needless to say, I mean, Jeff and I have a family to feed, right? So we got full-time jobs at really big firms that expect a lot from us. And so we got to be very strategic with our time and our attention and all that. But it's a passion of ours, and it's coming together really, really nicely. So I hope that all makes sense on what we were saying. That. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure Mesh can relate to building a business.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, so now for the audience to understand, I mean, it very much sounds like the donor thing is really more of a kickstart, how you kind of keep this going. But it really is like talent management, like full stack. So not only getting deals for players and like almost like on a like a CAA type thing, and then it's also like financial management as well. So essentially it's just like a full stack agency.
I want to be clear with that, Mesh, too. Then I think that it's good because there's some lines that could get blurred there. And I've told Raymond James, when I'm on my NIL and I'm wearing my NIL hat, I take my Raymond James hat off. So it's not like I'm there prospecting clients to say, hey, why don't you become a Raymond James client? Like, that's not how it works. It's like I can give them education, some general education about finance. But that's why we've partnered with a guy like Devon Kennard and other folks to come in and give that educational service to them. And so I think for me, it's just being able to recognize what players really need in this space from working with college and NFL players and then knowing what we have at our disposal. And then bringing the whole team together is really where I'm at with it.
A lot of the critics of NIL, I think, criticize the phase one, which was just donors throwing money at athletes, and it's unregulated. I think, Manuel and Jeff, your vision is really to create value through coaching and instructing and guiding players on how to monetize NIL and how to build brands. And then once they build a brand, there's going to be tons of advertisers and products and companies that are going to want to leverage that likeness because of the marketing power. So right now you'll see like, you know, Bryce Young on a Dr. Pepper commercial or Caleb Williams on a Heisman House commercial. And it's a handful of players, but it's usually the star quarterback. And maybe they have an agent, maybe someone reached out to them. But really, if you're coaching the players on how to monetize their likeness, then they really can take an active role in finding opportunities or working with you to find opportunities and capitalizing on things that they may not even know that they can monetize right now.
I think you're spot on with that, man. That's exactly what it is. And so when we talk to brands or we talk to potential sponsors of the collective or that want to work with student athletes, you know, you always hear about the helmet effect, right? You know, football players have a helmet on, so you can walk down the street and walk right by Zachariah Branch and not know who Zachariah Branch is. And he's the best freshman in all of college football because he's constantly wearing a helmet, right? And so how do we educate that? How do we educate them on how do you manage that, right? How do you manage those sorts of nuances that they have? And then when you give them that education, then we execute it. And then we can use data points to actually show the next classes of student athletes that are coming in is, hey, look, we work with this student athlete. This is what his following was. This is the strategy we put in place. This is how we help them price himself.
Yeah.
This is the brands that he did a job with, and there you go. And so it's a build, dude. It's a build.
There's a ton of buzz going on with conference realignment. USC, UCLA are leaving the Pac-12, joining the Big Ten. Does that impact anything you guys are doing, or is it completely, other than having to fly maybe more miles to go see the games, is it basically the same?
Like last night, we played at 7:30 out here in Tempe. And that was actually a good game. I mean, Arizona State came to play last night, so hats off to them. I mean, but Paul, you're in the East Coast. I mean, that's 10:30 your time, yeah, bro. Like, you're not going to stay up and watch it till 2 in the morning, right, dude. So now, you know, even if we're playing Rutgers or we're playing Minnesota Golden Gophers and we're playing them at noon Eastern, hey, you know what? There's going to be a bigger set of eyes on it. And now those Midwest and East Coast companies that maybe would not have engaged with us because it's like, well, you guys are on the West Coast, you guys over in the beach and palm trees. Now they're going to see us 6-7 times a year. Our job is to bring those things to the players' table. Like, that's our job, to go out, bring them in, coach them up. So when we do bring them in, those guys, those companies, those CMOs want to do business with them. And so it's just better for us. And I think the travel part, it's a little bit of a pain in the butt, but one thing I've learned when you travel and you go to new places, something positive always happens. Like you meet people that you would have never met. You have conversations that you would have never had.
Last question, guys. What is the name of your podcast? Where can we follow? Where can we find more information?
I think we're actually kind of launching this week, Wednesday. So it's called The Two Real Ones, the number two real, then the number one S, Two Real Ones, co-hosted by Lendale White and Sua Cravens. We're really excited with
it. Oh, you got Lendale.
Yeah. It's going to be good.
He's a legend.
He is awesome. A legend. And I think you can find it anywhere you find podcasts.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah. Jeff's been so key with that build out. We got to give credit to Sua Cravens that came up with the name Two Real Ones. And the reason why he did that is because him and Lendale both wore 21. So Two Real Ones, and they're both known for being very vocal and outspoken and very real about how they approach life. And so it just fit, their monkey ear just fit like a glove. And to the point of monetizing content and getting players on and all this other good stuff is we not only did it like a, you know, like an audio podcast that you go on to Spotify, the Apples and everybody else to listen to it, but we also have built like a show-like quality to it where it's actually like a TV show, an essence of that where there's some unique visuals and some great editing and great producing and a great way for us to get title sponsors in so they can go in and be able to partner with Conquest and be able to get players paid through that way. And through the podcast, we're going to be activating some current players and giving them like a spotlight feature so they can get on camera and they can hone their skills. So when they go to the NFL, they're used to doing this in a real content way. And we're just so excited about it, man. I mean, this is really what NIL's for. We're confident that we're going to have the best NIL collective podcast show in America. And we're confident in Lendale and Sue and everything they bring week by week, man. And so we're blessed to be in partnership with those brothers, man. And like the beautiful thing about our team, and Jeff can attest to this, is all this stuff is just phone calls, man. It's like, hey, guys, this is what we're thinking. Jeff and I have this idea. This is where we're at. What do you guys think? Hey, we're there with you guys. Let's do it. We're in. It's no.
Well, you do have to paper it, but I guess that's where Better Call Paul can come in.
I love that plug. Hey, Paul, you know you're our first call for that, my brother. So we look forward to doing some real iconic work with you too, man. So it's love, man. So, yeah, appreciate that. Appreciate the opportunity for the plug, and we'll definitely have a little spotlight with you on the pod at some point, dude. We'll have to kind of figure that out.
Yeah, I'll come out there. I'll have to come out there.
Uh-huh.
Meet Ace,
man. My big dog.
Of course, man. We appreciate you guys taking the time to talk to us.
Awesome. Well, this has been great.
Well, guys, yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, no, we're super excited. So glad you guys are doing NIL the right way. And obviously, you got a gem of a product and university. It's not a hard thing to sell, and I'm glad. Yeah. I think it's in good hands.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
Good meeting you. Thanks, man.
All right, guys. Fight on, baby.
Better Call Paul is produced and edited by Valentino Rivera and assistant producer Lisa Sanders. Have a great week.
Thanks, everyone.